Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. We promised you we'd go around the NFL at the top of the hour. To help us do it, our buddy Will Brinson from CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Will Brinson. Joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Will, I feel like months ago we had you on and we all kind of thought the Patriots and Cam Newton would make some sense. And it looked like it wasn't going to happen and now it has. Do you think there's any way he has to compete with or beat out Jarrett Stidham, or do you think this is just his job now?
Well, you know, yeah, and by the way, it was funny, like, everybody's taking victory laps on Twitter yesterday, like, I judge Cam Newton in the Pats. It's like, everybody saw Cam Newton in the Pats. It's happening.
That's right.
It's like, okay, everybody stop taking your victory lap. Let's go focus on something else, like maybe wearing masks. I don't think it's so much beat out Jared Stidham as it is beat out his foot injury, because I think that if Cam Newton is healthy, he will win a depth chart battle against Jared Stidham. Now, having said that, there is a pathway where a healthy Cam Newton loses to Jared Stidham, and if that happens, Patriots fans should actually be thrilled because it means Jared Stidham's freaking awesome. To me, I think you look at the Pats and what they've done the last 18 months and even more specifically the last 6 months, and it's just very clear that Bill Belichick in this offseason where – so much is unknown. You don't know how much practice time you're going to have. We think there's going to be a full season of games. He wants to run the football and to be very conservative on offense and simple on offense without a whole lot of bells and whistles and things to worry about getting people on the same page with. And if you have Cam Newton, he's healthy. Man, does that make your running game that much better? Look at Belichick and what they did. He and Josh McDaniels with Jacoby Brissett a few years ago, when they utilized Brissett in the read option when Tom Brady was suspended. And then, you know, Josh McDaniels, too, drafted Tim Tebow with a first-round pick in Denver. I think this is something they kind of wanted to do, to utilize a running quarterback for a while, and it's just Tom Brady just kept making them hit pause in those plans, and now they're going to get an opportunity to do it if Cam Newton can be healthy.
And speaking of Newton, I'm a believer. Well, I may look stupid, but in 2018 when he got hurt, he was playing pretty good ball. I mean, his completion percentage was the highest it's ever been, on pace for right around 4,000 yards, 500-plus, rushing yards. He was having a pretty good year. Not quite as good as the MVP year of 2015, but if they get something close to that, I think the Patriots are the favorite again in the AFC East. Is that just too optimistic?
No, not at all. And look, people got to understand something. Because there's a narrative out there about Cam Newton and his accuracy. And I read a lot about Cam Newton on CBSSports.com, sort of how it'll fit and what the offense might look like in New England. When Cam played for Rob Chudzinski as an offensive coordinator his first year, and I think Chud left after that year to be the Browns head coach, and then it was basically Mike Shula until 2018. I mean, no offense to Mike Shula, but the dude was having Cam do deep drops, holding the ball, waiting for Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess to get open on these deep routes. They couldn't get any separation. And then Cam would take a huge hit and wing the ball to Greg Olsen and hope he'd catch it with one hand as he's flying out of bounds. Like, that was basically the offense. You saw when Norv Turner came in 2018, and Scott Turner working with him as well, now in Washington, of course. We saw that. What they did was they implemented a short passing game, I think for two reasons. One, I mean, that's just sort of what well, three reasons. One, that's sort of what they do as part of the offense they like to run. Two, they wanted to give Cam get the ball out of Cam's hands quicker in order to minimize the number of shots you would take. And then three, you do that where you don't have him going vertical coming off shoulder surgery, out of the gates. And so you saw as the season, like in that Pittsburgh game that they got blown out in on a Thursday night, Cam got hurt and he just wasn't the same. Like he hurt his shoulder and he had to get it repaired again. To me, what you saw in 2019 with Cam, people blame the inaccuracies in those first two games on his shoulder. That's not the case at all. If you watch the film and watch the games, it is very clear that Cam Newton's foot, which he hurt in the preseason and then subsequently re-injured against Tampa Bay, is the reason why his mechanics were so off. He's like pigeon-toeing everything on his front foot, and he's sailing balls because he's using just his arm because he's in pain and he can't put pressure on his foot. Now the question is, can his foot get better by the time that the Patriots start their season and start their training camp and he's battling Jarrett Stidham? And if it does, will the foot hold up? And that's really the ultimate question to me. I think Josh McDaniels can design an offense that will keep him safe, but the foot thing is always tough because it's not something that, you know, is predicated on avoiding pressure in the pocket or taking shots. Like, it's, you could step the wrong way and re-injure your foot. It's just a pretty big unknown for him.
All right, but it does sound, Will, like you're high on him if he's healthier. So who wins the East? I mean, is New England better than Buffalo now with Cam Newton in the fold?
Buffalo has a better overall roster, but I think here's what it comes down to, I think, Grant, is what's more likely to happen? Cam Newton is healthy for a season, or Josh Allen takes a massive leap in his third year. So I think your decision kind of comes down to which one of those you believe. And I think both are possible, but I don't know that both are likely. I'll gamble on Cam, knowing that you have the added benefit of Bill Belichick maybe coaching up Jarrett Stidham and winning games with defense and just winning a lot of games because he's a better coach. I think Buffalo's right there. It's really, really close, in my opinion. If Allen takes a leap, Buffalo's a Super Bowl contender. But if everyone's on the Buffalo bandwagon, I will happily back the Patriots as a slight, barely a favorite or a slight underdog.
Well, I'm going to stay in the AFC here. AFC North, I think the Ravens will have a little bit of regression and still be really good. But I don't know if you can expect them to go 14-2 next year, I think, because that division is going to be better. I don't think the Bengals are ready for anything other than, to have Joe Burrow sling it, 50 times a game while they're getting beat. But Steelers, obviously plenty of intrigue there with Big Ben coming back. Cleveland, if they have an adult as their coach, should be pretty good. Just give me your thoughts on that division.
Yeah, I agree. It's a much better division. I think people are kind of sleeping on the Bengals, though. Joe Burrow, it's tough for the rookie in this offseason, but I mean, he is really good. And if he can come in and be an impact guy, it doesn't need to be Andrew Luck or Cam Newton their rookie years or anything like that, but just, can he be like a Baker Mayfield rookie year style type of quarterback in terms of performance and impact on them? You do that, you get Jonah Williams, their first round pick last year. He's going to be healthy in theory. AJ Green's coming back. I think he could have played last year, just wasn't going to throw away, he wasn't going to risk it for a two-win Bengals team. And if the defense can take a little step forward, I actually think the Bengals are a sneaky playoff contender. I like Baker Mayfield to bounce back in a big way this year. When you look at what Kevin Stefanski does, he emphasizes play action. He understands that he's gonna cater to what Baker does best. And that was the worst thing that Freddie Kitchens and that coaching staff did, and they did a lot of bad things. But they decided, after seeing how well Baker played down the stretch in 2018, they decided to implement an entirely new offense and to blend all these different offenses together last offseason. And it was just foolish. And people are sort of down on the Browns now. I think they can have a nice year. Pittsburgh's all about Big Ben, right? I don't know that I buy that he's going to come back from elbow surgery. But if he's been doing these beer workouts, as Jay Glazer points out, maybe it can come together. And then Baltimore, the one thing I would say about Baltimore is that they have a lot of young offensive weapons that could take a step forward this year. I think Marquise Brown could be in for a big season. Mark Andrews had a monster year and only played 41% of the snaps for them. Lamar Jackson, probably not going to have the same success that he did in terms of passing touchdowns. I think 9%+ touchdown rate, which is just an unsustainable number. But they retained both coordinators, and for a 14-2 team to do that is really surprising, especially the heat that Greg Roman and Don Martindale were getting in, the coaching circles and all that. So I think that there's a lot of consistency there. I still think Baltimore's the best team, but any of those other three teams making the playoffs wouldn't surprise me.
Will, always love having you on the show, man. Enjoy the holiday weekend. Thanks for hopping on.
You guys got it. Have a great weekend.
You too, brother. There's Will Brinson. Check him out. CBS Sports. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. The latest on the NBA at 1:30, bottom of the hour. Will Brad Beal dissipate for the Wizards? Danny, have you seen any of the work done so far on SoFi Stadium where the Rams and Chargers are going to play in L.A.?
I haven't, no.
Oh, this place is just unbelievable. 97% complete. They just installed the double-sided 2.2 million pound, 70,000 square foot video board called the Oculus at the top of the stadium.
Wow.
It's essentially it's the most technologically savvy board in sports, and there's nothing like this in any stadium. I mean, it looks like this place is just going to put Jerry's World to shame. It's not unlike like someone getting a nice car and then a neighbor gets a nicer car. Like Jerry's World, when it was built, was insanity, and no one could believe it. And that's been almost probably, what, 10 years ago now? Or
a decade
longer?
Now? Yeah.
So this is just going to put it to shame. But some of the images coming out of this stadium and seeing this board that they're raising to the top of a SoFi Stadium, going to be crazy for those fans that are in that venue to watch. And Kroenke's getting all the credit for his vision and what have you. But, I mean, the point is the Rams and the Chargers will share this sucker. It's massive, though, this stadium. I don't know that they're going to draw enough to fill this every single week in L.A. I'd say that's
yes.
a big question still because of the support that they've gotten. But it won't be because the venue's not amazing. And supposedly he's not just thinking about this as the home for two NFL teams. He wants every major sporting event in the country, all the things that you see now at Jerry's World, basically coming there. L.A. is a city, is an attraction that could probably pull that off.
Yeah, people, the league wants L.A. to be a thing. The league is desperate, in fact, for L.A. to be a thing because it's such a huge market. California has 40 million people. You can do your math. That's, you know, almost one-ninth of the population of this country. You know what I mean? Like, it's they want California to be a thing so badly, and they want L.A. specifically to be the hub, and that's just not what L.A. is. L.A. is a Lakers town, and it's a Hollywood go-get-up, you know, vegan, triple organic coffee latte with wheatgrass in it town, right? It is not a place that's excited about NFL football. That's why they've lost a number of teams in the past. Now, there's a critical mass of folks that do care about the Rams, but we've got a sample one of one that says no one cares about the Chargers, that San Diego's team that feels like it's on loan. Maybe that changes. Brand-new stadium, some sustained success might engender a new crop of fans. But, yeah, there is a clear desperation from the league that L.A. is a thing.
I wonder if the Chargers were really good and sustained success if L.A. is won over. I mean, you're right in that that's the best chance that they have. But there is something to be said for weird geographical rivalries, and it's not like San Diego and Los Angeles are next to each other. You know, it's not like this is like D.C. and Baltimore necessarily. You're talking about an hour and 55 minutes between the two along the coast, going through Long Beach and whatever else splits those two places out west. But it does seem like there was at least initial animosity, certainly from the Chargers fans when they chose to go to L.A. Like, really? You're going to Los Angeles? It's like if a D.C. team up and left and went to Baltimore or vice versa, you know, the way that people would probably feel. Hour longer, but, you know, you get the point.
Right.
And I guess for me, I do have concerns that the Chargers will ever get the respect, the reverence they need in L.A. to stay put. I think the Rams could be fine. But maybe I just feel that way because we've seen the Rams in the Super Bowl. They've got the hotshot head coach. They've been more fun. They have the more exciting offense. And we've just seen it already come to fruition that if you build it, they will come.
Yeah, there's a distinction. And the Rams were there before, right? They've bounced back and forth. They've done the L.A. thing, then on the St. Louis thing, and now, of course, back to L.A. So there is some built-in market share there. This Chargers thing – it's weird because I feel bad for, you know, some of the players because the Chargers have a great history. I know there's not a lot of Super Bowls there, but everyone from Fouts to LaDainian Tomlinson to Junior Seau to, you know, how great Phil Rivers was and Kellen Winslow and others, that's a good history of a team, even though they don't have the Super Bowl success to kind of back it up. So I feel bad saying this, but I kind of want them to fail. They shouldn't have moved. They shouldn't have gone to L.A. This was a selfish owner trying to get himself a cash grab, which I guess all things are boiled down to it. But I think they turned their back on a cool little market, a great little city like San Diego. And it's frustrating to me. So I kind of want them to fail. But at the same time, that's a weird thing to want for a team that I have no animus for.
Yeah, I don't want them to fail. I mean, to me, the better the NFL does and sports do, the better, not just for us, but for everybody who cares.
No, I get it.
So I want them to thrive and succeed. I definitely think leaving was bad. I wish that they didn't. I feel that way about every team leaving, though. I feel that way about St. Louis. I feel that way about San Diego. You know, Cleveland when they up and went to Baltimore. I mean, you name it. I think it stinks. Mm-hmm. I think it's awful. So I'll always feel that way. But I don't necessarily root against them. I guess I just root for a team to be in that other city. You know, and we maybe either grow the game or somewhere where it doesn't work ends up losing their squad or what have you. Real quick, because we got a couple of moments here before we get to the latest on the NBA and Bradley Beal. Wanted to bring up something I saw as this date in history this morning, which was July 2nd, 1941. So you're going back to the Joe DiMaggio hit streak in the 40s. Today he got to 45 consecutive games with a base hit, which made him the record holder in big league baseball. He would go on, obviously, the number that everybody knows is 56 straight games with a base hit. And I was thinking about this, Danny. We always talk about streaks that'll never be broken. At the top of that list is Cal Ripken Jr. playing in 26-32 in a row. But we'll never see anyone get 56 games, ever, with a hit. That was done in 1941. Mm-hmm. Before that, the 45-game streak that he tied was Willie Keeler of the NL's Orioles back in the 1800s. That's not the Baltimore Orioles that you know and I know. Pete Rose had a 44-game streak in 78, which, you know, that 44-game streak in 78 was right there knocking on the door. It felt like you're still 12 games away. And by the way, that's 10 years before I'm born, and we're talking about that being the closest anyone's gotten in quote-unquote modern-day baseball. But the other dates, when I look at the longest streaks, 1894, 1922, 1911, 1897, you got to get to Paul Molitor with the Brewers in 1987 at 39 games in terms of what I would consider like modern baseball. Paul Molitor, 39 games, 1987. Jimmy Rollins, 38 games, 05. Like, those are the guys I remember in my lifetime, and Molitor was actually a year before I was born, but that I've seen play, who have even gotten halfway there. Like, I don't think we're ever going to see this. Do you think there's a chance somehow, some way, somebody goes 56 straight games with a hit?
The era's got to be different, right? I mean, not the way the game is played now. A, pitching is too nasty. B, the home run is everything, and driving the ball for extra base hits and walks is everything. I mean, if someone like Ichiro couldn't do it, and Ichiro's nowhere to be found on this list. You got to go way, way, way down to find a, an Ichiro Suzuki hit streak. I don't think he even had a 30-game hit streak. And I'm not saying that to diminish him. I'm just saying how hard it is.
Didn't he? Didn't he go 31 straight? Ryan Zimmerman.
Did he get to that point? Yeah, Whit Merrifield is a guy I can think of with Kansas City. But you see the point I'm trying to make here. The way that this could happen is it's a free swinger who's not walking. Because when you walk, you take away your chance to get a base hit, just like striking out or anything else. It's a contact hitter with a lot of speed who swings at everything. And yeah. That just lends itself to going over sometimes, too. It is ridiculously hard. So I won't say never, because a lot of things I thought would never happen that I've seen happen in my day, whether they're performance-aided or otherwise. But that one seems as unapproachable as any record, is the way I would phrase it. Just, again, pitching is too good. Pitching is too good. Everybody is – high school kids throw 100 now. If you had a high school kid that threw 85 when I was playing, that was an enormous deal. It's just a different planet we're on now, man. Everyone's too well coached. Training methods are too good. Pitching is too nasty.
I feel really good, confident in saying there's no way it could happen during our lifetime. There's just no way that could happen with baseball where it is and how much it would have to change. Now, to say never, never's a long time. But I can't see it. I mean, as you said, a lot about baseball and just the way the game is played has to change for it to be a possibility. But it is not happening while you and I are on the other side of the flowers. Man, 56 games. And today, if you're wondering why are you talking about this, 79 years ago, DiMaggio got to the record number that he was trying to pass, which was 45. And then he went 11 more games with hits before his streak was broken. Grant and Danny on the Fan, will Bradley Beal play? And what would the difference mean for the Wizards with and without him? We'll talk to Andrew Sharp about that right here on the Fan. Stretch run of Grant and Danny, 25 minutes remaining, 2 o'clock, Chad Dukes versus the world. We were just talking about the Joe DiMaggio 56-game hitting streak. And one of our listeners who really is plugged in on the numbers in baseball, Ryan Spader, sent me a list of all of the streaks of the last 30 years. Seven guys have had hitting streaks longer than 30 games. Big names including Vladimir Guerrero, Chase Utley, and Jimmy Rollins. Nobody's gotten to 39 games. As we discuss, you know, whether or not someone could ever chase down 56 in DiMaggio, who Spader says was actually 72 out of 73 games that he hit safely, because he had a long streak right after going 0-for-3 when he got robbed on an infield hit by a shortstop. But we want to talk hoops right now, and the fact that the Wiz might be without Bradley Beal, and who better to do that with than a guest we've had on through the years, and I think highly of, who talks NBA right now on a show that he hosts with Ben Golliver, the greatest of all talk at NBA show. Andrew Sharp is with us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Andrew, are you surprised to hear that, you know, Brad Beal might not participate as the Wizards get back in action? And what was your take on that for them?
Yeah, you know, I was pretty surprised. I think particularly as the Nets have had, you know, half their team drop out here, it seemed like things were opening up a little bit for the Wizards, and they might actually be able to go down there and sneak their way into the playoffs with this sort of cockamamie scheme that the NBA has cooked up. But I also, you know, I checked with somebody over with the team, and it sounds like Beal is just trying to make sure that he's comfortable with his body right now. It's even less about COVID and more about, like, nobody's played basketball for 3 months. And so I don't blame him for sort of being careful about the way he approaches things, but it definitely changes the way we would think about the Wizards right now, because, like, if Beal is there, they actually are going to play some games that matter, and it could be more interesting than anyone would have expected a couple months ago.
How much are we slipping on that fact you just mentioned, Andrew, that these guys haven't played in a long time, and this is really unusual? This is like coming back from summer break if you shut yourself down in March to play in October, and they're doing this now with games that matter. How much are we not thinking about that part of it when it comes to getting back on the court?
Yeah, it's a real factor. You know, Kevin Durant gave an interview last week where he talked about it as well, and he said, look, like, if you're not playing for 3 months, like, it really does change things, and you're kind of putting yourself at risk. And some guys have been playing more than others. I've heard the Lakers have been playing 5-on-5 in L.A. I'm sure the Bucks have. Like, the title contenders have probably remained locked in. But it's been bizarre for everybody. And even now, as guys come back and work out, you know, coaches are in gloves and masks, and nobody can shower in the locker room. So it's a really strange setup, and they're still not really playing 5-on-5 yet. And all of that makes it kind of more difficult. It's not like coming back from an off season where you're playing all summer. So I think it is something that, like, is easy to overlook, but it's going to be a big adjustment for all these guys in terms of, like, the way they schedule their workouts.
Andrew, you know what I wonder about is, if, let's just say the Lakers win this title, and whatever team it is, if it's the Clippers with Kawhi, when we're talking about their ledger and how many championships they won in 25 years, are we going to say, but one of those 2020, like, one of those was the COVID championship? Is that something that'll be held against them, do you think?
It's definitely a possibility, you know, and it's sort of, as we all wait to actually have basketball to discuss and analyze, all we can kind of debate is whether this is going to have an asterisk next to it. And I think we're going to have to wait and see. Like, there are certain teams that could win this year. Like, let's say the Nuggets go out and win the title. Then obviously everybody's going to give them the side eye and say, well, this was just a really bizarre situation, and we're not sure how seriously to take any of this. But at the same time, I do think that there's a chance that all these teams go down there and it does get fairly intense as, like, the playoffs progress, and it ends up being cool. I mean, I don't think there's any question that this is unlike anything we've ever seen before. And so contextualizing it with, like, other titles through the years, like, this is going to jump out no matter what. But if the teams are not, like, sloppy and most everybody is available to play, if LeBron goes down there and battles it out with the Clippers for 7 games and then beats the Bucks in 6 or 7 games, like, that's going to matter. And it will matter when we look at his legacy years from now. But right now, like, there's just as much a possibility that teams go down there and everybody's rusty, and we sit there watching it like this doesn't feel normal. And in that case, then, yeah, everybody's going to kind of write it off, I think.
Follow our guest at Andrew Sharp on Twitter. Andrew, from a basketball junkie perspective, right? I root against LeBron personally, but from a hoops perspective, I can't wait to see what he does, given a little bit of rest. Like, he plays 100 games a year and goes so hard, and he was having such a renaissance year, even by his standards, this season. But give me a couple names that you cannot wait to see again that maybe we took for granted before this departure.
Yeah, and, you know, could I say I'm 100% with you that, like, if they're able to do this safely and get there and make it to August and September and actually play these games, like, it's going to be fascinating to see how some of these guys respond. So LeBron is one for sure. I also think, like, the Celtics were kind of looming as a dark horse in the East. I mean, like, the Bucks, if you look at their numbers, they look like one of the greatest teams of all time. But I think the Celtics can push them. And I'm curious to see how Jason Tatum looks. And in a weird way, like, this benefits certain guys. Like, Kemba Walker was playing on kind of a shaky knee over the final couple months we got to see this season, and now it's been like 4 months and he's healthy. So mm-hmm. Kemba is a guy that I'm curious about. And in the West, like, the Clippers were healthy for maybe 50% of the season. Like, we still haven't really seen what a full strength Clippers team looks like. And so getting to see them play together in games that actually matter, because they were also sort of on cruise control this season, that's going to be really interesting as well. And then the other team that I would throw out is, like, the Rockets. I've just never seen a team play basketball the way they were playing over the final month and a half. And I wonder how that's going to look over the course of a 7-game series. I wonder whether they're going to have an advantage as everybody is kind of out of sync a little bit. And then the Rockets are sort of like the knuckleball pitcher that nobody knows how to deal with. Like, that's a possibility. There are a lot of kind of fun variables in play with all this. And, you know, I hope we actually get to see it play out.
Andrew, the info is always great. Always love talking basketball with you, buddy. Thanks so much for hopping on with us on G&D.
Yes, sir. Take it easy, guys.
See you, buddy.
Be well. There's Andrew Sharp. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Basketball, Major League Baseball, the NHL, all getting going. We can now say this month, as we're into July, about 3 weeks away from the start of those sports again. Fingers crossed, assuming they're all able to get off the ground without an issue. You're listening to The Fan. Our stretch run is next right here on G&D. Final few minutes of Grant and Danny here on The Fan. And in our final segment every day, we rewind to this date in Nats history. We only have to go back 3 years from today to find July 2nd, 2017. Nats beat the Cardinals 7-2. Always good to beat the Cardinals, whether it's in the NLCS like last year or when Bryce Harper was providing dramatics 3 years ago with a two-homer game, drove in four on nationally televised Sunday Night Baseball. Now, we talk about Harper, Danny, having one amazing season when he won the MVP award in 2015. 2017 was actually probably a better year until he got hurt when he slid across the first base bag and hurt his knee against the San Francisco Giants. He was hitting .318 on this date in Nats history 3 years ago when he hit two home runs against the Cards.
The 0-2. Swinging a high drive to right center field deep. Piscotty going back on the run to the warning track. Leaps at the wall. It's gone! It's Bryce Harper, 4, and the Cardinals nothing. Harper with two home runs. Both two-run shots. And Harper with number 20 on the season doubles the Nationals' lead.
That was the much-acclaimed Bryce Harper B-hack. Remember that story, GP, where he cut down and didn't take the huge fall into the first base dugout monster swing that we've seen sometimes from him when he's striking out a ton? That was the just choke up, put the ball in play. Not choke up, but just put the ball in play swing. And, oh, by the way, my power's so ridiculous, I can still hit 40 wall scrapers. It was, the last time we'd see him north of that 300 mark as a hitter.
Few of the big stories of the day before we get out of here on this Thursday. 9 more NBA players have tested positive for the coronavirus. The total is now sitting at 25. 16 players tested positive last week. The 9 additional positive tests now found between June 24th and 29th. raise the number to 25. The NBA said 10 of 884 team staff members who were tested also tested positive. The numbers, honestly, are still lower than I was expecting. I don't know how that relates to what other people thought, but to have tested as many players and staffers as they have now and only have 35 or so positive tests, I think is probably, you know, a net win for the league based on expectations. We still don't know what the threshold for any of these leagues are
right,
as far as when they would start to be concerned or worried or shut things down. But it's obviously not 25 because the NBA is pushing forward with no regard right now for those positive tests other than just telling those players to get right and join us in the bubble when you're ready.
I wouldn't say it's more or less than I expected. I kind of didn't know what to expect, to be honest with you. I guess it's fairly representative of the population at large, right, that we think of at this moment, or maybe I'm crazy. But the question, honestly, is what you just posed. And we've been asking it since March, and I don't know the answer now, and I don't know that they know the answer, right? I don't know if it's – if, you know, one team gets hit with it so bad that you just – they don't get to play games for 2 weeks. What are we doing? Like, what's the critical number? What's the number where we say, that's it, we're pulling the plug? And is it higher for a different sport? Is it a bigger deal depending on who gets it? Like, you know, with all due respect to the – you know, the 14th guy, not that his life is more or less valuable, but the 14th guy on the Lakers bench is not as critical to the NBA continuing as LeBron James. Is it if LeBron gets it, or is it if, I don't know.
Certainly not that.
Yeah, name the end
guy.
You should have said, like,
but let me just say, I mean, you know this, and I know you're just kind of throwing something out there, but they're not going to not play games because LeBron gets it. I mean, whether guy gets it and it's LeBron or the 14th guy that you mentioned, I don't think that's going to be a factor. It's going to hurt the legitimacy of the product and how we review and remember it years from now. But it's not going to change the way that they decide whether or not to keep playing.
Well, it's so I'm not explaining myself very well. What I mean to say is it so that if enough stars get it, then we say, okay, this isn't worth it anymore? Or is it if just the sheer numbers of people get it? I guess I'm saying that if Jared Dudley gets it, we love Jared Dudley, he's an awesome dude. If Jared Dudley gets it, you could still have a Lakers game tomorrow. If you got no LeBron, there are four or five starters, no Anthony Davis, no LeBron, no Danny Green, that's a much bigger deal for the league than it is if, you know, you can't have Alex Caruso come off the bench for his 5 points a game. I guess is kind of my point. So my point is I don't know what the threshold is.
I just think that's going to really determine how we view it in terms of its legitimacy. Are people thinking that this is fun, that it's cool, that it's worthwhile? And when we remember it was an amazing postseason tournament. If those guys are playing, I think we're going to like it. And if they're not, we aren't as much, and it's going to be panned. But I'm not sure that – to me, it's just going to be the quantity of players over the quality. I don't know that it will have any impact on what Adam Silver and his crew do, you know, based on how many of the big names get it. Danny, for your three-day weekend, because we are off tomorrow as we get ready for the 4th of July, you have said that no big plans, nothing crazy, which I get. Are you going to do a little cooking out? Might you get to eat a deviled egg at some point? Will there be some potato salad?
That is the hope, my friend. The hope is that I have delicious foodstuffs. I will man the grill because it's a way to not deal with screaming children and still contribute in some way. That is kind of my plan. It's like, I'll happily do the cooking. Well, not really the cooking. I'll stand by the fire and do that. You guys deal with the children for it's going to take a lot longer, low and slow, so probably an hour or so. I need to keep flipping them. You got to keep flipping them.
I forgot to turn the grill on. Darn. I'll start it now.
Let me check on them one more time for hours.
Is there anything that you are in the mood to eat cookout-wise that you haven't had in a little while? Because we're now into July. It's July 4th weekend. This will be the kickoff of grill season for the Ruyer Paulson contingency.
Yeah, we had snassages from the grill last night that were just tremendous. These were great, great sausages. So I gotta tell you, I haven't had like a big old ribs situation in a long time, and I'd like to do that. I'd like some ribs to be involved in my weekend. That's what I want. I'm just telling you what I want. I don't know if I'm gonna get it, but that's what I want. What about you?
How much for ribs?
Rib.
How much for one rib? How much for some Coke? Just a little bit, like a lidful. What is that?
What is that in my hand?
Chris Rock.
That's Chris Rock, yeah. I think it was his Living Color stint.
Is it in Living Color? Okay, I didn't know if it was a movie or not. God, that's funny. By the way, I got to say really quickly that contingency is not the word I was looking for. I was looking for a contingent. It always ricks me when people botch that. I just botch it. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll be back on Monday. Thank you so much for listening. For Danny, Tommy, and Darren Grant, thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.